Part two of our investigation into a modern interpretation of an ancient art form. We continue our conversation with the founders of Passiflora Mosaic Studio. Hello. My name is Stephen DeLuque, and you are listening to Ears on Art, a chapter of the radio magazine Issues and Ideas, produced here at the studios of KCBX listener-supported public radio in San Luis Obispo. KCBX serves the California Central Coast from Ventura to Salinas. Today we are going to continue our conversation with Danelle and Fred Passion, the creative forces behind Passiflora Mosaics in Grover Beach. Mosaics are one of the earliest artistic expressions from ancient times. The art form developed in many different cultures independently. Some of the earliest examples were from China, which consisted of carefully placed pebble pavements. The Sumerians used cone-shaped rods that were pushed into columns to create geometric patterns. Mosaics in Middle Eastern and Mediterranean villas and temples were both functional and decorative. They were considered to be a prestigious object for their owners. Even in the Americas, the Aztecs covered masks and other ceremonial objects with precious stones. The Greeks started producing pebble mosaics around 800 BC, usually in geometric patterns. The Romans began to emulate the Greeks, but promoted the art form to depict historical scenes and the stories of their gods. Around 500 AD, glass and gold became the primary materials used in mosaics, and they began to appear in churches and mosques, representing religious figures and iconography. Today, mosaics fall into many different forms and are found throughout the world. Which brings us to today's guests. Danelle Passion quit her regular job about 10 years ago to take on Passiflora Mosaics as her primary occupation. Her husband, Fred, joined her full-time several years later. Over the past 10 years, Fred and Danelle Passion have taught hundreds of hands-on workshops, introducing thousands to mosaic art and sculpture. They also specialize in commissioned mosaics, found object art, concrete sculpture, and architectural installations. You can visit their website at passifloramosaics.com. And now, co-host Krista Hewitt and I continue our conversation with Danelle and Fred Passion of Passiflora Mosaics.
Stephen and I are here in Grover Beach at Passiflora Mosaic Studio with Danelle. Good afternoon.
Hi, Krista. Hi, Steve.
And with Fred.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Are you working on pieces usually as a team, or do you each do your own stuff, or does it vary?
That's a good question. A lot of people ask us that. We've come to find our own strengths and weaknesses, and so we feel we each have a strength, and we put it together, and seems to work really well in creating our large pieces anyway. You know, we always work on them together. And, of course, there's differences in opinions, you know, and we go round and round at times, but we just have to come to an agreement, and it always seems to work out. It works well.
Let's go back to the fireplace.
At Camp Ocean Pines, that one?
Whichever, any fireplace.
Oh, okay.
Fireplace is a fairly large-scale surface, potentially. Are you constructing as you go? How much do you have to totally plan out ahead if it's a commission? How do you play that one?
Oh, you totally plan it out ahead. If it's a commission, they want to know what they're getting. We like to start by, like, Fred will draw a few designs, I will draw a few designs, and we don't want to look at each other's design. And then we kind of come together and see what we came up with, and then we might combine the designs, or he might like one I did, or whatever. And then we'll just choose and make it doable and present it to them and see which design they like and kind of go from there. But yeah, we definitely plan it out.
Well, I can certainly see that, I guess, what would be called the cartoon or whatever has
right.
to be planned out and presented. I think I was thinking more when you're actually applying the pieces, how much are you able to do that ahead of time, or is that some of where your different skills come in when you're on the scene?
It really depends, you know, on each individual project. A lot of times, whenever it's possible, you know, our first choice is to try to do as much of the work in our studio. And like, say if it's a flat surface that we're doing the mosaic on, a lot of it can be done in sections on a flat work table. Yeah, typically the way that that's done is the mosaic is made and adhered to the fiber mesh, first of all. Then it's cut into sections and then brought to the site and installed.
That makes a lot of sense. So then you're seeing how it's developing, but the customer can come in along the way and get a firsthand glimpse of what's going on. I'm sounding as though I have no idea what this is about, and I really do have more of an idea, but I would think that, you know, there's an aspect of some of it that may involve a certain amount of spontaneity at some stage.
Yeah, there is, you know. We like to present them with material options as well, so they are aware of how that cartoon translates into the actual finished product. So we give them samples of things so they could see them.
And the other question we've talked about, the styrofoam, to me, I think building armatures is always a real challenge because, as you've indicated, it has to hold up, can't collapse under weight, but it also has to be the appropriate size and understand how much thickness is going to be added with the materials that you're putting on. Have you found that that's sometimes more of a challenge than you want, or is that one now kind of second nature to you?
Well, I think it's become kind of second nature now. I mean, because you know how thick the tile is, if it's tile or the glass or whatever the tessera you're using, you kind of know how thick it's going to be.
I'm assuming that there are other things that you're dealing with, too, in terms of how much detail am I putting into the shape of the armature.
Most of the forms that we've made haven't been real intricate. You know, they've been fairly simple, you know, the basic forms. We try to get the detail in the mosaic itself as opposed to having too elaborate of a form. That's one beauty about mosaic, that fine detail can be done at that stage instead of trying to get it in the, you know, the sculpture itself.
Is that detail more about the color and the intricacy there in terms of bringing out features of an animal or something, or is it also part of actual form, be it a wing, a foot, a beak, you know, whatever?
I think it's knowing how to use your materials and be creative. I made this cat sculpture, and I cut the edge of a antique plate out and put it along the outside of his ears, and then I put a mirror that was already cracked, and it created these lines going through the glass, so it looked like the hair in his ears was kind of, you know, sparkling, and it just kind of framed the lacy edge of the plate, framed his ears. So, you know, you just start to look at your materials in a whole different way. Another thing, someone brought me these salt shakers, the Fiestaware salt shakers. So those became the eyes on a giant frog. They're just kind of bulging out, you know, they're round. And things like that, you just look at things differently. And puka shells, if you look at the fireplace at Camp Ocean Pines on the shoreline of the beach, there's a whole necklace of puka shells that has become the shells in the sand in the beach. So the detail is found in those kind of objects.
When you come up with a design, do the materials automatically come to you as you're designing it, or is it just more like, oh, I wonder how I can make that happen?
Kind of both. We were creating a design for Lucile Packard Children's Hospital in Palo Alto recently, and we were working on a design for an underwater scene, and there's things we've used and elements we've used in other projects that I thought, oh, wow, that would make cool coral, or those the lace edge of plates, to me, they look like underwater coral, or things like that that pop up in your mind as far as the use of materials. But we're always open to new ideas, you know, and so people drop things off and they kind of inspire you. Think outside the box.
I was going to say, I think new ideas definitely, in this case, would be coming very often from mm-hmm. new materials to you.
Yep, exactly.
What the rest of us have thrown away because it was broken. Remember that.
Mm-hmm. Save all the broken pieces. We're sitting in this wonderful studio, and there are literally hundreds of little tiny trays filled with all sorts of objects of art. But overhead, there's also some flying trash can fish. And how did those come about?
Yeah, those would be my trash can fish. By the way, they're called Fred's fish. Yeah, those I started making probably about 15 years ago. When I'm not working on mosaics with Donnell, one of my other hobbies is fishing. Years ago, I remember hearing about largemouth bass, and that one of the nicknames for them are bucket mouth bass. So one day, I had a couple of old trash cans laying around, so I just started playing with the idea of bucket mouth, trying to come up with a fish, with a trash can. And so that's how Fred's fish got started.
And at the moment, these are not decorated with mosaic. Is that down the line, or are these fish going to just be their own thing?
Well, most of them are just going to be stay metal and maybe painted. But there is one fish that is somewhat mosaic, if you want to call it mosaic. But and I've only made one this way. I flattened out hundreds of bottle caps and riveted those onto the trash can, and those are the scales of the fish. And so it's pretty colorful.
And time-consuming.
Yeah, that's why that was the one and only. And no, I didn't drink all of the beer that went into it.
The other collection that's here are quite a few lamp bases, mostly glass ones, all different colors. Have you actually used them as a whole shape? Are you waiting to get inspired? Or
are you going to take a hammer to them?
No, they will maintain their shape. We do use some in our workshop. Students and ourselves, we can mosaic lamps, but the colorful ones I started collecting several years back to make kind of like totems out in the garden. We have lamp posts, and they're stacked on top of each other, and some of the lamps are mosaiced, and we incorporate other things in them, but that's what they're for.
So in that context, then, a ready-made form, glass or ceramic, mm-hmm. or possibly wood, could be used to then coat and mosaic?
Yes. Anything that's the foundation is sturdy enough to hold up to the mosaic, and the environment it will be put in can be used if you have the right adhesive.
Know your material.
Yes, adhesive is the big question people ask.
And here again, and there's a learning curve going on with this that you have been exploring with perhaps trial and error, but I would assume also sometimes you don't want to go through that much trial. Right. So
we don't really like the trial and error part. We like to trial and succeed. So we really try to research the adhesive because it's pretty important with everything that you're making.
If you have just joined us, you're listening to Ears on Art, a segment of Issues and Ideas, produced here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo, California. Today, we are continuing our conversation with Donnell and Fred Passion, the creative forces behind Passiflora Mosaics.
Over the past 20 years or so, there have been a lot of books written about mosaic and mosaic technique. Sometimes the material that you read is kind of questionable. So we've kind of learned to, when we do research like that, to kind of pick and choose which techniques, we feel apply to what we do. And once we find something that works, we generally stick to it. Pardon the pun. There is a lot of good information out there through books and the internet about how to mosaic. You just have to be careful about the techniques that you try to apply. There is a little bit of a trial and error learning curve to everything.
Is there quite a bit of creating out of old things a different kind of memorabilia for people, that they're maybe using something that has some importance to them that they're trying to show off in a different way?
Yeah, absolutely. People come to the workshops with grandma's china set and broken plates and things that have meaning to them, and they want to incorporate them in their, maybe their mirrors or frames and so forth. And so that definitely is a really a plus when it comes to mosaics. You can make it something memorable that you want to keep forever.
Well, there certainly is enough china in the world that has the chip here and the chip there that...
Or you might want to forget it forever. I don't know.
That too.
That one was broken on purpose.
Yeah. There's a lot of ugly china out there as well.
In our house, it was silver that went down the garbage disposal, created a whole new art form. Loud grinding noise and a few mutterings and find the switch. How do I turn this damn thing off? I just keep looking around. This place is just so loaded. You know, we've been asked sometimes when we come to do these interviews, well, the studio isn't very clean, so, you know, do I have time to clean it up? And we remind people that it's radio.
Every studio we've been to has been spotless.
Well, this one certainly is ready for the next onslaught of work, whether it's the two of you or how many people usually are in a workshop.
Oh, there can be as many as 15. Typical, I don't know, about 7 or 8 or something like that. Just depends on the month. Fred and I, being that there's two of us, we feel that we do a pretty good job at really giving people the attention they need, and we like to ask them before they come to the workshop, you know, what is it in particularly you want to learn in this workshop? And then we try to focus on that. We each give everyone the attention they deserve so that they can feel comfortable and enjoy the learning process. We really work at that.
Thinking about the challenge for the two of you, because it would seem like probably constant motion.
That's true, but that's why we're here.
Exactly.
We enjoy it, and I think people usually leave with a smile on their face, and they create something that, you know, they really love. It's worth seeing that, to put forth that effort to achieve it.
You have a website?
Yes, passifloramosaics.com, and you can register for workshops online now.
And obviously be able to see some of the work and get a sense of what all of this is about, because we can talk for a long time, but color commentary this isn't in that sense.
And it's passiflora as in the passion flower, so you got to spell that right. Two S's, P-A-S-S-I-F-L-O-R-A, mosaics.com.
Can't just assume. And then, of course, Google comes up and says, did you mean? I don't know what I meant. Just give it to me.
Should we go show them the things in the yard?
I mean, sure.
You
sure.
Didn't really get to see anything.
We can walk.
We can walk.
And then you can at least look and you might have a question.
Fred and Danielle's studio is separated from their house, so we decided to take a walk through the garden and then entered their house, where the infamous first table is located.
I have a question. Here's the lightweight puffed heart Fred made out of styrofoam that's on a stake for your garden, ready to mosaic. And this is a little, it's supposed to be a corgi dog, but his name is Gorky. So he's got little short legs, so he's pretty cute. He's ready to mosaic. You can see the little snakes. That originally, Rose May and Chris Cameron, when they came to our open studio tour, they saw the snakes in the floor in the garage, and they wanted that at Camp Ocean Pines. So that was our first workshop at Camp Ocean Pines, was creating snakes in the crafts room. And then that just grew from there.
And let's explain this. These snakes are filling in cracks in cement, like in your driveway.
And yeah, and those appeared naturally when we bought the house. They were there. So we just kind of expanded them a little and filled them with mosaic to look like snakes. The garden mushrooms are one of the most popular workshop projects. Fred individually makes each one sand cast, so they're concrete. And they stand up good outdoors.
Love the mushrooms. They're really colorful.
Here's the frog I was telling you about with the salt shaker eyes. He's ready to mosaic. I don't want to mosaic him because somebody might want to buy him and I'm still attached to him. I don't want to get rid of him yet.
You just put a really high price on it.
I know, but if I came and said I wanted to buy the frog, will you mosaic it now? Could I do that, or do you wait until they're done?
Wait till they're done. But you could do that, too. I would make you one and mosaic it for you.
So are the mushrooms about the size that you would do for, like, a two-day?
The weekend workshop, you mosaic all day Saturday, and then you come back and grout Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you, depending on the size of the mushroom, you can either have two smaller ones or one larger one. Mm-hmm. Has to be the size that you can get done feasibly in a day.
Right.
So this is our first project. This is the table we told you about that mm-hmm. Fred and I worked on together before we knew what we were doing. And then things kind of evolved. And here's another puffed heart finished. And this is will actually be in the catalog, this photograph.
For Open Studios,
yes.
How long have you been participating in Open Studios?
I believe this is our 14th year. Yeah, we only missed 1 year.
Okay.
And we've been doing it consecutively, and that was because we were working on the Cottage Hospital project, mm-hmm. and we just didn't have time.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing we wanted to mention is the Artie Party, the fundraiser for Arts Obispo, coming up July 19th.
Okay, so this would be a fundraiser for them, so the money goes to them, and you do the instruction. And it's an afternoon, a day of...
Yes, it's 1 day only. You get to create either I believe it's a 12 by 16 mirror or 10 by 12 wall piece with a technique Fred had mentioned, just about using eclectic found objects, shells, and it's ungrouted. So it's a lot of fun, and we're going to serve lunch too. So you can check with Arts Obispo.
And they could bring some object or objects if they needed to in terms of the memorabilia kind of notion that we had before. But if they don't, you obviously have quite an array of things to make use of.
That's right, yes.
Terrific. When you look at the first table that you did, and you're kind of saying when we didn't know much, would it change a whole lot using the same plates? Would it be a whole lot different?
That's a good question, because for me, I didn't know anything about the tile saw. I didn't know really anything about nippers. Yes, it would change because it would be more level. It would be flatter. Now we know how to use the tools to achieve the flatness when you use china, because see, china has a lot of different thicknesses, and then it has that ridge on the back, you know, they call the foot or whatever, that we know how to remove, so we can use the complete design on the plate to achieve a smooth surface. So that's the main thing that would change.
But you obviously use it all the time, so it's good enough for now.
Yes, and we're ready to sell it, so if anybody likes it, you know. I think for them, if they wanted to put a glass top on it or something, it would probably be more usable for most people. But yeah, we use it every day. We want to redecorate. We're tired of it.
Make a new one.
Yeah.
Well, both the house and the yard are just, again, a whole wonderful, eclectic collection of both your made objects and other things that you've acquired. It's always fun to be in artists' houses.
These are examples of the ungrouted technique. I mean, they can't see them out there, but they'll just have to come by and see them.
And the difference is that there's quite a bit of variation in surface thickness, for one. As you say, the whole nature of what you were using is there. So something might stick out a little farther, and if you were trying to grout things like that, you'd cover up a lot of the
detail.
The detail.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And there's some things you just don't want to grout because they're more porous and it would change the color. Mm-hmm. Certain kinds of stones and, you know, shells and coral and certain things that would absorb that grout. So there's just more detail and beauty in the natural forms of the elements by themselves, ungrouted.
And also grout has a color, so it that line would become much more a factor in the whole appearance of the piece.
Yes, we're not against grout. We just like doing that technique. And grout definitely has its place.
Okay, so we've got workshops that are ongoing throughout the year for you, different topics, different times. And then this arty party, which is a one-day shot, and that benefits Arts Obispo and commission work. So you're busy folk.
Yes, we are. Having fun doing it, too.
Well, that's the important part.
Yeah, that's what we've found, you know, with what we do, is we try to be as diverse as we can, trying to do a lot of different things, you know, just to make a living.
Mm-hmm. And plus, then we don't get bored. You know, I mean, if you have a lot of different styles and avenues. In fact, we just started a 3-hour workshop with mosaic jewelry. People are really enjoying that because it doesn't take very long. And then you know, have this little piece that you created. So that's probably the newest workshop we've added.
No, this has just been fascinating. I just loved all the objects in the studio because there is such an amazing array of different things, of materials that you're using in the mosaics.
It's endless. It really is. You know, it's only limited by your imagination, so.
And to a small extent, the nature of the material, as in some things won't glue or won't hold up. But obviously stone and glass and shells and a lot of other things like that are going to last a long time, so. Or was there something I forgot in that list?
No, I guess you're right. Yeah, pretty much. You covered it.
Well, we want to thank you so much for this. It's really been fun. And just so you know, you're the first mosaic folk that we have interviewed.
Well, thank you. I hope it's as interesting as the beauty of the art looks. So
it will be. Thank you, Fred.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You have been listening to the second half of a conversation with the founders of Passiflora Mosaics, Danelle and Fred Passion. Their website is passifloramosaics.com, and their phone number is 805-489-8860. On their website is a list of all the classes and workshops being offered at their studio, and you can register online. If you wish to listen to the first half of the program, or any previous program, go to kcbx.org and click on the Listen Now button at the top. Then click On Demand and find the show you want in the drop-down box. You have been listening to Ears on Art, which is a segment of a radio magazine called Issues and Ideas. Ears on Art is produced at the studios of KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo, serving the California Central Coast. The studios and offices of KCBX are located at 4100 Vachel Lane, just off of the intersection of Los Osos Valley Road and South Higuera. My name is Stephen DeLuque, and for co-host Krista Hewitt, we thank you so very much for listening. A big hello and thank you for all of those of you who are attending the Live Oak Music Festival, and congratulations to all the Cal Poly graduates, and happy Father's Day.
And that does it for today's Issues and Ideas. Stay tuned next for On Being. Support for KCBX comes from the Slow Saturday Morning Farmers Market. Fresh veggies and fruit direct from farmers next to World Market and Embassy Suites. Saturday mornings from 8 until 10:45, where you can meet friends and talk to the farmers. This is Public Radio KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara, streaming around the world at kcbx.org, and you can like us on Facebook at KCBX FM. The time is now 2 o'clock.